Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Andrew Horowitz here. And, well, where are we? End of the summer, it seems, coming very soon. It's been a fun summer. You're listening to episode 121, and we have lots to talk to you about today. Not about the weather again, because I've been talking about it a lot, because I just love the summertime, the beach, and the fun, and the sun, and the heat. It's just really just what it's all about, I guess. But fortunately, down here in Florida, that's about all year round. For those of you up north, come on and visit sometime, why don't you? In the meantime, how about we talk about some finance, some things that are going on, some things that are not going on. One of the things that I thought we'd do today was bring on some traders. I have actually lined up Tony Turner, who is a really good teacher of trading. She wrote a few books, and I think you'll really enjoy what she has to say. I always do when I talk to her. So I think I'm going to ask her about some, I want to talk about some trading signals maybe, and I was thinking about looking at some maybe candle designs or some structures that would be interesting to talk about. I know a lot of people listening look at technicals. Technicals have been broken of late on both sides. We've seen a lot of trend lines being broken. We've seen a lot of volatility and vacillation, a lot of interesting situations. One of the things that I've talked about recently is that fundamental analysis has been really interesting. It's been hard to pin, you know, really kind of pin that tail on the donkey, if you will, when it comes to understanding what's going on fundamentally. Because so many companies like GE, let's take GE as an example. GE came out with abysmal earnings, and there was really a questionable outlook. And their, we saw that their loan portfolio was getting worse. We saw that sales were kind of soft, and at the same time, the stock dropped dramatically. 3 days later, 4 days later, there was a couple of different buy signals given on them, and Goldman came out with their conviction list, and GE went from, I don't know, about 11.50 to about 14 in the last 10 trading days or so. That's since their very very dour report. But on the other hand, we've seen some really good reports come out, and that's done very well. Much of what's happened right now has been reflexive reaction to those reports and some better than expected economic news, which is very, very good to hear. But one of the things also that I wanted to talk about was what's going on with the economics. And a lot of people had asked me last week that, you know, we're seeing such negative revisions to things. We're seeing the unemployment rate continue to have problems. And there's this kind of this thing that you hear on a continual basis, right, that the unemployment rate and the unemployment is a lagging indicator. That is true for part of it. For other parts of it, it's not so true. It's more of a coincident indicator, if you will. Not a forward indicator, not a leading indicator, but a coincident indicator. Tell us what's happening right now. We know that on a weekly basis when we see the ADP, not the ADP numbers, excuse me, the weekly initial claim numbers. So we saw that this week, and that came in a little bit better, but the continuing claims were not so good. But I thought what we'd do is just start the show before we get into the trading discussion with a quick article that I found on the Wall Street Journal last week. And it was entitled, Why Did the Unemployment Rate Drop? Because that was kind of, I think it was a surprise to most people, except for Goldman Sachs, of course, who came out with an announcement 3 p.m., the trading day Thursday, prior to the release of the actual unemployment rate, that said that we are going to see a 250,000 people unemployed this week, or the non-farm payrolls at 250,000 greater. And they said, I think, a 9.5% unemployment rate. Now, when it came in, It was really, I mean, it couldn't get any closer. It was 247,000 and 9.4. We actually just took a drop to the better in the unemployment rate. Now, that's really good. At the same time, I think it's important to understand why that happened and what does that mean. So when it actually went from 9.5 to, it went to 9.4, of course, but we think about this, and this is a paraphrasing some from this article, that the economy actually lost 250,000 jobs. So does this signal a peak of the jobless rate? You know, I mean, we keep hearing about 10% unemployment, and even the president and Larry Summers and the whole economic team talks about this 10% number. Well, there's two different things we're looking at here, right? The payroll figures are from the Labor Department, and the unemployment rate is from a different set of statistics. And it's really asking people whether or not they're looking for jobs, they're not looking for jobs. They could drop out of the labor force because they're kind of fed up and tired of looking for jobs. And we could see a decline because less people would be considered jobless. So in other words, if you were to ask me if I'm looking for a job and I said, yes, do you have a job? No. Well, I am unemployed. If you ask me, are you looking for a job? No, not really. Well, I'm not in the labor pool anymore, so I can't be considered unemployed. Now, or I should say, I'm not considered jobless, right? I'm not considered jobless. So we're talking about the jobless rate. So when we look at one and we look at the actual people that are actually coming into the market or out of the market, the employment market, and the other one, we look at the actual rate, there's two different things that we're looking at. And oftentimes in a recessionary period, we do see peaks of the unemployment rate. Oh, I would say, a few months to maybe 6 months later than when the recession is over. Now, the recession over doesn't always tie out into when the market is over, when the market recovery is over, because we could see a double dip. We could see markets move ahead. We could see markets move a little bit behind. It all depends on the circumstances. But right now, for the most part, we see some good things in the market right now. We talked about that last week. Actually, I had some clients for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy write me recently. They said, Andrew, you've become much more bullish. Why? Why now? And it's interesting because we've become bullish. We still have a cash position, and we are chasing this market, it seems. It's we're trying to pay a little catch-up like everybody else is in this recent bull market. It's a very tough thing to deal with right now because the daily data has moved so quickly on either side. One day you have the markets down 1.5%. They look like they're going down another 2. One day they're going up 1.5%. All of a sudden they look like they're going up another 5, and then they turn around 2 days later. One of the things that is really interesting is that we're seeing, I talked about this before, price action on the markets. So here's what happens. Let me give you an example. So let's say you have stock ABC that is $20 a share. And one day it's $20 a share. You like the stock. You think that's something that you want to enter into. And the problem right now is you got to think very quickly, because by the time you think about what you're thinking about, it could be at 15 or 25. And that's not really a healthy and a good thing, really, because it really makes you rush into things, and I don't really care for that. But at the same time, when you think about that for a second, when the stock moves to 15, is it an overreaction? Why did it get to 15? Is it what we call here? We call it a bounce point. Is it a bounce point? Is it an overreaction to the down? And if so, is there support there? Is there a 20, a 50-day, a 100, 200-day moving average that it's colliding with? Is it the Fibonacci retracement? Is it simply just that people are selling shares and there's just not a lot of volume out there, and therefore you see a lot of movement with that position? There's a whole host of reasons, but the point is oftentimes you do see that point where people are willing to step in and buy it, whether or not that support line, let's say it was 15 again, is reasonable or not. Now, from 20 to 15 is a big number. We're talking, $5 on a $20 stock is significant. I mean, it's 25% we're talking about there. That's a big move to the downside. Last week, we saw that with the Buckle. The Buckle came out after we saw the same-store sales, and it was not keeping pace with where anybody thought it was going to be, really. I mean, or it wasn't keeping pace with what they have done before. Same-store sales were down, and the stock was down over 15%. Now, interestingly, on this particular stock, we were being patient and said, on this stock, we're going to wait till it gets down to about the $27 range, symbol BKE. Take a look at this. 2 days before the actual move down, Jim Cramer was pounding the table, this is a buy, buy, buy. But meanwhile, this came out and all of a sudden dropped down. Now, the story is this, that, the fundamentals are strong with the company. They've had good same-store sales, period over period over period. They're pretty well situated. The demographics are okay. But the company has really been at the top of the list for a long time. Now, what's really interesting about that is that it's considered a leader. It's been on a good deal of recommended lists. Now, it dropped down. Now, if you look at where it dropped down to, 25 and a half, maybe 26, was a bounce point we saw. Okay, it was also some Fibonacci retracement numbers, but really it was a bounce point. And at that point, we felt comfortable that at least if we got in at that point, it wouldn't be really a mess. You know, we wouldn't really get hurt at that point, and we could always buy down a little bit from there, but that's sort of the range we want to be in. We think that there was a kind of a backstop at that point, and we waited very, very patiently for that to happen, and it finally happened. And the next day, it was up about 6.5% from where we bought it in one day. I mean, that's a nice little score. Now, did we buy a lot? I don't know, 2%+ in a portfolio of it. But you know what? That is the kind of thing that these days this market is talking about. You buy on the dips, or I don't even like to say that. Let's scratch that from the discussion. We buy in pullbacks. You don't chase the market. The problem is that how much of a pullback are we going to get in any circumstance? For example, I mean, if you look at some of the companies that, for example, are in the solar play. We like the solar industry. We invested there. They got a pullback. They went back up. They got a pullback again. They went back up. Do we keep buying? Well, sometimes you got to be a little more patient than that and kind of stick it out a little bit if you think the company's good. But at the same time, you don't want to take too much of a hit. So that's why you kind of do, as we did, we call it the solar package. We get 2, 3, 4 positions that we like in the industry, maybe a 1% position, 1.5% position each, maybe a total of 5% in the portfolio. But right now, many of the portfolio players that I know, many of the money managers, not the mutual fund buy and hold group, okay, that is all giddy and happy that this year they're up 10, 12, 15%. Meanwhile, they were down 40% last year. Now, let's talk about that. Think about this. You know this. This hurts. This discussion hurts. If you were buy and hold, you know what happened last year. You're happy now, but you know, this year, we can kind of forget about the past. But last year was a tragedy, right? I mean, last year you went from $100,000 in your account down to 70. And this year, if you're up 15%, we're talking about 70 times 15. We're really talking about only, you're back up to 80. You're still down 20%. I'd rather be down 5% and or 2% or zero and or whatever it is on that period. Now, it's going to take a while to catch up. The markets are, you know, pretty wild. Can you catch up? Sure. But you know what? What happens if the market turns around? Are you ever going to get out? Well, right now, everybody's being trained not to get out. Don't get out. Don't sell anything. Because every single time in the last, I don't know, 4 months, when the stocks drop down, they come back up, it seems. Not every stock. But look at AIG. Look what happened there. This week, it exploded by 80% or so, 90%, maybe 100%. 100% up this week. Many of the preferred stocks up 100% last quarter. Look at the bank stocks. I mean, even though we know that there's been nothing changed in their toxic assets, they're up 50, 100, 150%. Remarkable. It's a training process, folks. And, you know, that's exactly what is going to happen eventually, maybe not this year, not next year, not in 2 years. I don't know when there's going to be another market drop and nobody's going to get out again because nobody is going to have that fear again. They'll say, oh, I'll return back. What do I care? Now, it could happen tomorrow. It could happen next week. It could happen in 20 years. I don't know. I'm just saying this is what happens. And we have to be a little bit more, I think, have our ears up and listen to the real things that are out there and the underlying positions and the underlying issues. And, you know, do we want to be in some of the container companies that are issuing shares like crazy. You know, we saw many of the stocks doing shelf offerings, and they just get crushed the day they do the shelf offering, and then somehow they come back, maybe not all the way, but they have a nice pop the next day. So, you know, with one day news that goes down 10%, the next day news it goes up 10%, maybe it goes up another 10%, then it goes down 20%. This is what they call kind of the trading environment that we're in. It's a very difficult thing if you do want to conserve money and not put risk out there and just be absolutely, you know, balls to the walls, because right now, you know, right now there's so many competing factors. But the one thing that we do know is that China has led the way for some time, and the consumption of China, if you look at many of the different transcripts and the conference calls that we see from companies, China is mentioned all over the place. Now, what's interesting about that, and I'm not calling for a crash to China really per se, but I got to tell you something. We lightened our position on China last week because, you know, for our trading portfolios. You know, long term, okay, fine. But some of the scuttlebutt that's going on right now about China, generally speaking, China pulling back on their loans or at least regulating the financial markets, talking about how much of the loans, some of the loans have, that they issued, the, you know, trillions of billions and billions of dollars that they issued, and I think $1.1 trillion actually, of loans that they issued, maybe not all of it wound up in houses. Maybe some of it wound up in speculative instruments, such as markets and maybe some other ventures that were out there. Now, that would explain why the market just keeps going up and up, because you think you can just get more money, more loans, put it in the market, make some money. Okay, great. But at the same time, you have to wonder what happens if they do put a clamp down on that. I mean, who knows if it's just talk. But I will tell you that the China markets, the Shenzhen, not the Hong Kong, was down, I think, 3 days in a row, totaling somewhere about 5, 6, 7% last week on this talk. Talk about controlling loans, talk about controlling markets and better oversight and understanding of where the money's coming from and trying to stamp out some of the speculation. Interesting. Interesting. Hong Kong got hurt also. The whole region was hurt, actually, the end of last week with some of this. And we'll see what the U.S. numbers bring to them for next week. Because, again, the unemployment rate was something that many, many people were watching very closely. So, anyway, thought that would be an interesting intro to the show today. And let's get on with our guests. When we get back, we're going to talk to Tony Turner and then have a little discussion. You got to stand by for Fausto Buglisi, our favorite trader. Because I'll be teaching a course, and he's going to tell you all about it. It's a free course you can do next week on Tuesday. And we'll have links to that actually on the website as well. But meanwhile, stay tuned. Stick around. Hang on. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. All right, I promised you that we're going to have a bit of trading today. It's going to be fun, I think. My friend Tony Turner is here. She is an expert in the area of trading. She's written several books. The most recent is the second edition of A Beginner's Guide to Short-Term Trading. She's also written A Beginner's Guide to Trading Online, I guess one and two, and Day Trading Online. And she's all around. She gets around, I don't mean to say that rudely. Sorry about that, Tony. Tony gets around on television, that is. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Andrew. Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about technical analysis, trading. Let's get a couple things straight. This market, when we say this market, let's talk about 2009. Is this a normal kind of market condition that you've seen over the years? What do you think is going on in terms of the look of the patterns and how it's playing out?
The patterns that I see, Andrew, a lot of them are bizarre. A lot of the patterns on stocks in particular, of course, exchange-traded funds are a little more conservative because they're obviously following an index. But I see some bizarre patterns that I find kind of unexplainable, especially since, of course, the move down to the March lows was a very violent one, and we all remember that. That was violent, and it was unhappy. Since then, I've seen some stocks jump around that make me wonder what's really going on, and I've not yet really put my finger on it.
Well, how long have you been doing this? How many years have you been involved in the market?
I've been involved in the market, oh, good grief, now that I think back, seriously, for 18 years. Okay. I've been trading for 12.
Okay. So you understand the rhythm, if you will, of the market, right?
I mean,
there's a rhythm. There's a rhythm of a stock. There's a rhythm of a market. There's a rhythm of the whole thing, if you follow what I'm saying. You know, there's that kind of rhythm. And a lot of it you can chart. You can draw lines of Fibonacci's. You can run cycles. You can do trend lines. You could do a variety of analysis of candlesticks and things of that nature. All these different things, you know. What's your favorite thing? You know, let's talk about, not in this bizarre market condition, what's your favorite kind of analysis to do when it comes to technical analysis?
Well, I have a pattern that I've developed over the years, and it's one that I teach to the traders that that we have in our group, in our circle. And first of all, I, of course, use daily charts as my primary charts as traders. That's something, as you know, that we generally use daily charts as our primary trends. Then if I find a stock that's consolidating or pulling back, and I go in and look at the fundamentals like you. I use Investor's Business Daily. If that's all satisfactory, then I will, even if I'm doing a day trade, I will jump to the weekly chart because it gives, I mean, after all, how many months can you get on a daily chart on your monitor unless you've got an unusual monitor? I want to see the bigger picture, so I'll go to a weekly chart to see the real picture. And then I even jumped to a monthly chart. Mm-hmm. A lot of traders skip this part, but it's amazing how many times what you think is this glorious uptrend is actually a rally in the context of a much bigger downtrend.
Right.
Doesn't mean I won't take the trade. Does mean that I will adjust my position sizing, look for areas of resistance or support that aren't obvious on shorter time frames. So I use multiple time frames, absolutely. That reminds me of
my friend Brian Shannon. He has a book called Multiple Time Frames or Technical Analysis of Multiple Time Frames. And another friend of mine, Kevin DePew, from Minionville, who does a lot of DeMarc. You know, are you familiar with DeMarc technical analysis at all?
Slightly, yeah, I know what you mean.
It's very strange, but it works awfully well. But Kevin actually goes to monthly and sometimes annual. I mean, that means you have to have a lot of patience. You know,
and
he's looking at the annual trend. He was just talking to me about an annual trend of silver recently. So let's talk about resistance levels, because that's support and resistance, because that's a key. I think that's on a daily or on a minute chart and trading now. That is probably one of the key things that traders look at. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And you have to look at it. And I'm going to add to your statement that coupling volume with support and resistance and interpreting how volume correlates with that can really, really, really add to your analysis.
So actually, just to kind of throw another name out there, William O'Neill, who is Investors Business Daily, of course, there's a lot of patterns that he likes, but he really likes the whole volume discussion because he looks at, you know, if there's volume coming in and it's significant volume over what's traditional, the basic line volume, it's usually institutional investors coming in, and you want to get, you know, you want to ride that their coattails because they're moving in. One of his favorite patterns is the cup and handle, right? The cup of the handle, where you get this kind of bowl shape, and then you get a little drawback. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is this part. When you get that handle part, where you get a little bit of a take back, you know, people saying, okay, I'm going to take my profits there. You want to make sure that the volume is what, light, right? It's much lighter. And then it kind of takes off from
there. Yeah, you want volume light on the pullback or the handle in that case.
Right. So what does it say to you when you have volume that is high on the pullback?
If volume is high on the pullback, that's telling me that people are just as interested in selling this stock as they were on buying it in the first place. So that's a negative.
Right. And that's kind of like...
negative.
Yeah. And what is your analysis of the volume of this... the S&P of late? Isn't the volume has been, you know, had been dropping off for a while, then it picked up a little bit, but one of the things we notice is that the downward volume oftentimes is far, you know, far higher than the upward volume. Have you noticed that?
It is, and of course, as you know, Andrew, the volume generally tapers off in the summer, although today on the S&P, looking at the SPY, of course, there was pretty, well, average to high volume on today's, let's call it, shakiness.
Mm-hmm.
I see some volume coming in here. And, I mean, how many people do you know from the hedge fund manager down the hall from me on one side to the asset manager who's a couple of doors down on the other side? It's like, okay, nobody expects this, even the simple statement, nobody expects this to go up much longer. I'm wondering where all the euphoria is coming from. Evidently, I read different reports than everybody else.
Yeah, you must, because things are fine. Everything's fine.
I know.
Tony, everything's fine. You know what's interesting, though? The fundamental traders that I know, or the fundamental investors that I know, not the buy and hold, but the fundamentals, they're looking at fundamentals only for a moment, really got locked out of this market. You know, locked out of this uptick.
Absolutely.
Now, they may have done well last year because they really, if they studied it correctly, right? But if you only use fundamentals. Right. Now, if you use just technicals, technicals failed last year to a point also for a lot of people. But depending on how much, you know, some of those big moves were a problem. But clearly in this kind of environment, it would seem that you want to weight yourself towards the technicals, even though there is this choppiness. And if you do so, what kind of patterns should we be looking for both breakdown and a break up? In other words, is there candle patterns, or what are you looking at these days?
Well, I'm watching, of course, for candle patterns known as spinning top or doji. And by the way, the plural of doji, as you know, is doji. So cocktail conversation.
Thank
Andrew.
Thank you.
Yeah. So a doji is simply a candle that represents a day or a week where the price opens and closes at about the same place. at about the same place. Spinning top means it opens and closes slightly away from each other. But both of those indicate indecision. And
let me just interrupt you. Let me describe this. So we have a stick, a straight up and down stick, vertical stick, and a horizontal and a horizontal stick anywhere in the range that's the same from left side to right side, and that's a doji.
Right, right. A doji simply means price opens and closes at or just about at the same place during the day. So what that, or the week or the month, whatever you're looking at on your chart. So that means that the buyers couldn't close it, the bulls couldn't close it higher, so they weren't strong. The bears couldn't close it down toward the lows, so the bears didn't win. It's a tug of war, and as you know, tops in markets, if indeed we're experiencing even a short-term top here, tops are volatile, and indecision is what the market, of course, doesn't like. So that's what I'm watching out for here.
Do we care how long the wick is on the doji?
Not so much. I mean, a longer wick or shadow to the top and the bottom indicates more confusion.
Mm-hmm. And if we have a long wick on the bottom and the...
That indicates buyers. However, that can turn into a hanging man, which, of course, has a connotation of negativity. But with candle patterns, what one needs to know is that you always need to wait until the next candle forms, or certainly begins to form, before you can give the name it a hanging man or a topping pattern of some kind, or a bottoming pattern.
So now there's a couple different ones. There's a shooting star, and there's also a, what's the one I'm thinking about now, where it goes up, it's a star, it's another star. It's a very rare pattern where you see a few that move up very sharply and all of a sudden one that tops out, almost gaps up, and it just hangs there. And then you see this kind of the same on the other side and it moves down from there. Is that the shooting star? I'm trying to think which one that I'm thinking
from
of.
From what you're saying, it sounds like it might be.
Yeah, evening star
means that it gaps up,
yes,
or it gaps open or gaps up away from the prior candle or bar, and then it gaps up and it's hanging up at the top of a move like a star, and then the next candle or bar down gaps down from it. So it's like a star hanging up in the sky. Of course, it's negative. And for people who went back and want to go back and look at the NASDAQ composite, I think it is, back in the old bear market of 2000-2002, there was a very definitive double top there with doji both times. Mm. or I don't know if they were really evening stars, but they were close to that. So those are tough duty. Those are to get past, to get higher than.
Yeah. So you teach a lot of these courses. I see that you teach also, and you have a trading, what I call them, clubs, but newsletters and all sorts of things with that. Now, can you tell me and teach us right now what the appropriate way is to draw a trend line? Now, it may seem sound simple to you, but you know, there's a discussion of, you know, do you draw it with for example, let's draw a downtrend line, right? And we're going to use lower highs, okay? Lower highs across on the situation. Can you draw it with two, or is it really more appropriate when you would use a very orthodox method of using only, you have to get three tops, three closes on the top, on the highs that are lower to make a trend line. But these days, a lot of people draw them with two. I know that sounds kind of silly, but what do you think?
Well, three says that it's a major trend line. Three says this is very important. Pay attention. If you connect two lines, of course, because you want to, if a trend is moving lower, you're going to connect the highs because you want to see what that is, and then you extend that line and see if that line is continued to be confirmed by the stock moving up to it, banging its head on it, and then starting it down. If it does that, it's a major trend line, and it may be difficult for it to move above it. But you have to start somewhere, and maybe the two line thing is that's where we started with that, is let's get going with it, and then we draw it out. And if it doesn't stick, if the line gets if price penetrates and goes through it, then that line is no longer in force,
right,
at least, unless it's a little poke above and then fall back down,
right,
and then
right,
it's still in force.
So now the other thing is that moving averages, a lot of different moving averages, there's a lot of things that have been talked about on television these days. We talk about the Golden Cross, which I want to get to in a second, and talk about how that could be good and, you know, maybe not. But there's different kinds of moving averages to use. Do you use a simple moving average, which is just the past, let's say, 20 days or 50 days or 100 days, or do you use a exponential moving average, which weights the moving average towards the current bar? So you're going to get a kind of a more frequent or more realistic view of the moving averages. Which one do you prefer, or both?
Andrew, I use both. When I'm looking at an index like the S&P, like the NASDAQ, like the Dow, when I'm looking at an index, I tend to use standard moving averages, the 20, the 50, the 200, simple moving averages. And a lot of times I show my my market club. We use those for assessing the indices because, as you said, our institutional investors, they do look at the 50-day, they do look at the 200-day moving average. So I do use those for indices. Now, when I go into my trades, we'll move into combinations of simple and exponential moving averages that work. I have a couple of combinations, actually probably four combinations, that I use quite a bit, depending on the goal of my trade, the intention, whether the longer-term ones I use for position trades, and they're more gentle, they're more back to the 50-day and 20-day and so forth. But for real short, quick trades, I call my sleeping tiger is one. We use exponential moving averages and jump in when certain things happen, and certainly take profits when we see the weaknesses coming in or at the worst, or the price pattern crosses back down over that moving average. That's our definite out no matter what.
Right. So what's your time frames usually? I mean, how long are we holding a trade for? And it may not matter, but what's your traditional, you know, is it kind of more of a swing trade situation?
Well, it has been a swing trade. Now, I would prefer to do position trades, meaning buy when a stock is basing, or we'll include ETFs in that, buy when they're basing, make a real nice base. I was hoping that natural gas was doing that, but I keep getting stuck.
Come on. It's like nobody likes it.
I know. I keep getting stopped out of this thing, but I don't give it room to go either,
right,
by the way. But my great dream, of course, in natural gas also has a great to do as a barometer for the economy. So in my heart, I want it to go up as
yep,
well as for my trade.
Right.
I want to see us healthy. I want industrial use of natural gas. I want to see that moving higher.
The funny thing about the natural gas, if you don't just take 1 minute on this, is that you wonder if the natural gas is telling the story, you know, in terms of use, or is it that there's so much of it that the supply is just ridiculous? Or is it just that, you know, traders don't like it? Because if you think about it for a second, oil has been doing the same thing. I mean, we have a massive, you know, build on oil and gasoline and diesel. But at the same time, that doesn't seem to matter. It seems like oil just goes up. Even on the bad days, oil goes up. Natural gas comes out with an inventory number and it just plummets 8% in a day. But let me ask you this. You know, the other question I want to ask you is in terms of the you teach the various classes and the seminars, and you have your market club, and you have your books, and you have, it looks like DVDs, you have all sorts of things going on. I'll just give everybody the website. It's Toni Turner with an I, Toni, T-O-N-I, Turner.com. She has all sorts of stuff on there, and her TV appearances, etc. So now, how do you trade this market? How do you make money in this market? I mean, is it ETF-based? Is it stock-based? Is it just broad-based? I mean, it seems like a very difficult thing, especially for a newbie, to come in and work this market with as I see it. Now tell me if I'm wrong. You totally critique what I'm about to say, okay? The trend, yes, there's a trend, but the trend is like 3 days, and then it reverses. And it looks like the trend's going the other way. Then they snap you back the other way, and that's very difficult to get down on.
I'm going more and more to cash and just staying there. When I don't understand something, I've learned the hard way after all these years of trading. When I'm in doubt, I get out.
Oh,
and
I like that.
I just keep pulling them off and pulling them off. Like last week, we traded utilities and it with very short stops. I'm like, you're in 3 days, you're out. Now, were we at the beginning of what appears to be a bull market, then we would take more risk. But the higher this market gets, and quite honestly to me, the more illogical it gets, that gives us good reason, or at least me, to tell people, get more conservative, lock down, stand on the sidelines. I'm not pushing stocks. I'm pushing safety and profits, and stand on the sidelines. And don't be buying these leveraged inverse ETFs to short the market when we're still in an uptrend, even though whether we should be or not, we are.
Well, what's interesting you're better off not doing anything. It's interesting because we had in the end of June, beginning of July, we had a pretty full position of shorts and inverse shorts, as a matter of fact, because we had every indication that the market was going, you know, down from there. How much down, but, you know, going down from there. And I must tell you that everything was just fine and dandy until that one day when Meredith Whitney started talking about how great Goldman was. And
absolutely. That was the day.
That was the day. And by the way, that day, if you recall that day, even after she talked and after she gave her opinion and after everything, the market opened and it continued to go down the market. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then at 10:30 in the morning, all of a sudden, if you looked to your left for 5 minutes, the market was down 1% and it ended the day up 2.5%. It's a 3.5% move on, I don't even know what it was. It was just a 3.5% move. It was a 3.5% move, it seemed, because it was bouncing on that 875 number, bouncing, 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 bouncing. And it was like, I guess the bulls knew if they let that go through 875, there was going to be a problem.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And everybody in my group came on the next day and said, what happened? I said, Meredith Whitney.
Yeah, I guess.
And some people hadn't heard of her, and they're like, what? And I said, just trust me on this, it was Meredith Whitney.
But I don't understand why there was like an hour and a half delay on that whole thing. That's what really kind of bothered me about it. I didn't understand why the hour and a half delay on that. And as a matter of fact, if you recall what Meredith Whitney said, which was taken out of context, she was calling for a bullish assessment on Goldman for the next day, not a bullish assessment on the economy or on any of the other bank stocks, except for the fact that she thought Bank of America was the cheapest in the group. That's what she said. And that still moved the market as much as it did, which is remarkable to me.
Yeah, and you know too, Andrew, a lot of people watch Goldman now and have for some time as kind of a barometer for the economy and banking and what's going on. It's just a highly watched stock. Watch Goldman, and you can tell what the rest of the world's going to be.
Well, that's because they create what happens for the rest of the world. By the way, did you look at the statistics last week that showed how much money they made in the second quarter?
You tell me because I read it. I don't remember.
This is unbelievable. So for the second quarter, they made a lot of money in the first quarter. The second quarter, this is impressive. The second quarter, they made 47 days out of the quarter. They made over $100 million a day in trading. But that's not the fun part. The fun part is the rest of the days, they made at least $50 million. Now, the question I have is, seriously, that's a 100% hit rate, right? How do you do that? Not one day down? I mean, that's what I think I read correctly. I don't know that they had any significant days down or anything down. How do you have that many days up? You have the same answer I do, I think. I mean, honestly, isn't that amazing?
Yes.
you've had hot streaks, right? Where, you know, you pretty much can't do any wrong. You've had probably cold streaks, right?
All of us have, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
The question is, I mean, how do you string together that much time, essentially 6 months of time, with all sorts of market conditions? I don't know. I figure the only answer I can come up with is they have to know the outcome. That's how they made so much money.
You said it. Yeah. I didn't say it.
I understand.
You said it.
Anyway. All right. So let's go into, you have a discussion and you did a seminar online called Volume Signals. Tell me what are some of the volume signals and where you use them from and what can that teach us?
Well, as I said earlier, Andrew, I'm really into volume and what it what it tells us, and if you try to find discussions on volume, they're very difficult to find by experts. Mm-hmm. People just don't put out studies on them. So I've read everything I can find, and then I just sat and stared at the screen, chart after chart after chart, and watched how it does, and it gives such incredible signals, and no one talks about it. And some of them seem to be contradictory, so people get confused and just want to toss them. Like, if the MACD is going up, then the world is a good place. They get it. But volume, as it moves down to a new low, can get extreme on the panic side, and then all of a sudden it can taper off to absolutely very, very little, and that's a whole other signal, but it confuses people because it can go from so high, which is panic, which is people selling, to even higher, which actually looks like more panic, but can mean that some short covering is coming in and some buyers are coming in. Then it can drift off in this bottoming process to very low, which then confuses people. But what that actually means, it's not contradictory, is that the sellers are getting exhausted.
Yeah.
And then price can start moving up quickly, actually on less volume, mm-hmm. which contradicts the buy, the breakout on strong volume thing. It contradicts it, but then I try to explain what's happening is that, of course, there are different price levels for every stock, not just the inside bid and ask, but as if you've ever looked at a level 2 screen, you know there's actually many bids and many asks, and if people are starting to buy and there aren't many levels left and demand comes in, then price can eat through those levels and move the stock a lot higher on volume that actually isn't as strong as the fear volume that came into it moving down. It's a kind of a finesse thing, but once you learn to read it, you will not be able to trade or invest because you can see bottoms coming in pretty easily. You won't want to trade or invest without it.
Yep, I hear you. That's pretty cool. So we're going to end it here, and I think there's so much more that you can offer. I encourage people to check out Tony Turner, T-O-N-I, Turner. We'll put a link on the show notes. A few people have asked me, by the way, where are the show notes? I'm going to tell you real quickly. All you have to do is on the top of thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click podcasts, and up comes all the different podcasts. And those are the show notes. They're the actual page where the information about the guests appear, what we talked about, some of the links, some pictures, maybe a chart or two or something like that, some of the stocks that we talk about. That's all right there and how to get to everywhere. So I encourage you to do that. Tony Turner, you are awesome. And I thank you, and I encourage my listeners. There are some free monthly email newsletters as well as some weekly video newsletters and things like that you do and seminars that people can obviously check out, and I encourage them to do so because you know about technical analysis, and I like that.
Thank you, Andrew, so much for having me.
All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks, Tony.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, we just got finished with one trader, one technical analysis. We're going to go right into another discussion with a good friend of mine, Fausto Puglisi, because actually we have a class coming up next week, and Fausto is going to talk about it. But Fausto, a little bit different trading. He's more of a day trader, runs with the level 2 screens, and he's, all about, how to make money during the day, quick trade, scalp trade. So, Fausto, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again, Andrew.
You having a good summer?
Thank God we got rid of that rainstorm that we had, but now the weather's been breaking. It's been nice.
Yeah. Actually, I was in New York for a weekend a couple of weeks back just for a real quickie, and boy, there was some. It was ridiculous, the amount of rain. I've never seen rain like that in New York ever.
They said it rained 27 out of the 30 days in June.
Really? Wow.
That's pretty bad.
So trading's been pretty wild. I mean, we've seen some, very big, ranges of volatility and all that. You're teaching your classes on how to trade and how to make the most of this, of course, over at Cyber Trading University. So I want to tell everybody and give them a heads up that we have a class coming up, and I thought you'd talk a little bit about it.
That's right. I mean, Andrew's doing a class for us. It's going to be on it's coming up next week, which is August 11th at 4:30 p.m. Visit our website at cybertradinguniversity.com or just go to Andrew's website, mm-hmm. Disciplined Investor. You have that link. Look for his nice little face picture on the right from the Cyber Trading University. Click on it, you'll be able to register for it. And and the whole idea is it'll be interactive. You'll be able to see slideshows. You get to see examples. You'll see live trading going on, and see what Andrew's basically been preaching all these years. So if you just register for that free class, you'll get to know a little bit more about Andrew, even just hearing his voice, but now you'll be able to see it visually.
Yeah, because it's really cool the way that you do things. But I just love the way you do things in terms of the you know, the whole WebEx experience, the online and you're teaching and you're doing presentation and, you know, kind of having chat at the same time with the people that are involved. So it's Tuesday if you want to sign up. The date is August, what is the date? August 11th, right?
That's correct.
Is that right? August 11th is the
4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So make sure of that, right after the market closes.
Right, and that's on Tuesday. And then we have actually a follow-up, which will be Wednesday and Friday, which are actually, we call the paid class, which is if you want to, you know, get a little bit deeper into what we're doing. So the intro is kind of like to see if you want to, you know, participate, what's it all about, what are we talking about. We're talking about, you know, the Quantafunda, Tekna, the whole, you know, how do you find a stock and how do you then review it and come up with a pricing target, and then technically, is it the right time to buy it? You know, is it or an ETF or a stock, or, you know, give you the insight that we always talk about. So what are the things that you've been, you know, kind of teaching these days? What kind of things are you focusing on?
Well, it's just, the things have been just off the charts. I mean, we've been having such a huge bull market. I just came back from Toronto. I just did a traders summit up there for about 2 days, 3 days. We've been at 6,600 market, I mean, being at 9,400 now, I mean, we're having such a great bull market. But the thing is that people don't know, do we pass it? Is it still going higher? Do I jump in now? So we're getting a lot of people in classes figuring that out. But the beauty about it, the market has just been so volatile that's all we care about. There's been a lot of action. There's been a lot of great opportunities to make money in the market, as long as you're not holding these positions overnight, because obviously nothing lasts forever. But that's what we've been focusing on. A lot of these stocks have been starting making some big runs, jumping on these big runs and just taking those profits. So it's, trading has been a little bit different, where before we've been having huge shortings, we've been very negative. But, you know, but what's going on? We've been a hell of a positive. But you still got to know, you know, is it enough? And that's
right.
Why it's important.
Well, what's really interesting, what I find is that, have you noticed this trend where you have, let's say, a day or two, let's say up or down, it doesn't matter which way you want to look at it, and then, you know, you find a stock that's up 10% or 15% or down 10% or 15%, and then a day or so later, it's just remarkably the other direction. I mean, it's almost like there's this price action that's going on rather than technical action. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, we were just talking about it earlier about AIG. I mean, stock literally almost doubled. I mean, 100% in a couple of days. And that's just a brand name stock that a lot of people might be familiar with. But there's so many of them out there, Andrew. I mean, the pharmaceuticals have been awfully hot. Cars have been, car stocks have been really hot. Solar energy has also been taking some, you know, greens could probably be the next biggest thing. You know, green energy is going to be pretty hot. But you just got to know when to get in, when to get out of them. It's been a trader's market. I mean, here we are. Before, we're talking about Goldman Sachs too. I mean, Goldman Sachs. A lot of people don't know this, but 70% of their profit comes from their trading desk, their prop desk, right. And they've been trading this market like crazy, and that's where they've been making a lot of their money. So
can they continue to do that? I mean, can they continue to make that kind of money?
Absolutely. They can move markets.
Well, they do, right? No, I understand that. It's amazing. So so with that in mind, if Goldman Sachs has the ability to do that, do traders have, in your opinion, do traders still have an advantage at all, or can they have an advantage?
Absolutely, because all you need to know is which market maker. One thing that we teach, and that's what's great about this webinar that we're going to be doing next week. Well, you know, the whole idea is knowing who that market maker is at certain market conditions. You know, I'm even going to be doing one at 12 o'clock. So I know you're doing one at 4:30. I'm doing one at 12 p.m. Eastern time. They can register for that one, too, and see it. But, yeah, I mean, it's a trader's market. This is it's been a trader's market for the past 3 years. This hasn't been an investor's market. Investors got crushed in the last 2 years, losing 40, 50% on their money. I mean, if you think about where they were a year ago and where they are today, they're still down.
Right. So what? Explain to me real quickly what you mean by a trader's market.
A trader's market is meaning that the market has been very volatile and has been moving very very fluently on both directions. So it's more of a trader to jump in When you have big volatility in the market, that's a trader's market. When you have a very slow, consistent movement, that's more of an investor's market. You know, they're looking more at the long term. So there's been a big trader's market. When you get these big swings in the market, that's where you make your money. I mean, some people wish they could make 10% a year. You're finding stocks when you have a big movement in the market, you can make 10% a day.
Well, yeah. We see both sides of that, though. I will tell you, the 10% a day up and 10% a day down. But I agree with you that we try to clip our profits when we can. And oftentimes we're finding that these days that, you know, stocks continue to go up just, you know, slightly or more afterwards. And we're left out in the cold. I mean, taking a 10, 12, 15% profit on something, you know, trying to cut your losses has always been a great game plan. These days it's kind of, you know, maybe you should let it run a little bit more.
That's right. But in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, that, you know, nothing lasts forever. I mean, we had a really big, big bull run right now. So, you know, you still got to be very, very cautious because it's eventually, you know, nothing lasts forever. Especially when we saw the Dow go up to 14,000. I mean, nothing lasts forever. It had a huge bull
run. That took 5 years to get there, although it was a little bit more. There was definitely some points of it being very volatile on the upside and downside, for that matter. But it took a long time to get there. This one seems to be rallying. I mean, by 30 days, we could have it right back to where it was.
Exactly, exactly. So that's why you don't want to hold overnight positions. You can't trust things in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Let's remind everybody when that class is against Tuesday. How do they sign up? They go to your site, Cyber Trading University.
Go to cybertradinguniversity.com. Look up Andrew Horowitz on our search, or we have it right on our homepage on quick links on the left. Or just go to Discipline Investor. You can register right off your website, right on the bottom. So, and not only that, I have also look for a free course right on Cyber Trading University's homepage. So, but like we talk about, and that's what very big on Andrew and I is the best trade is making an investment in yourself and getting yourself educated. You got to learn before you can earn it. And this is a great opportunity to hear Andrew and talk to Andrew in this event, because we do these events not very frequently with Andrew. But when you do have the opportunity, you don't want to miss this opportunity to be with him and let him show you the way he does his strategies and his game plans and be able to talk to him other than just listen to him on the podcast.
All right, appreciate it. Fausto, you're the best. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon, buddy.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing everyone next week.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up right there. I hope you enjoyed the show. Talking about trading, and hopefully you can join me next Tuesday if you hear this on the weekend. If not, it's Tuesday, August, I believe it's the 11th. For a course on just extraordinary trading opportunities, the Disciplined Investor Way, Quantafund to Techna over at Cyber Trading University. That's free. So you can definitely get a chance to see that. There'll be a pretty good room there because it's online, so anybody can come. No standing room only. Mouse clicking only, I guess. Anyway, join me there, and I hope that you have a great week ahead. There's a lot to look at. Earnings season winding down. Economics are winding up. Rhetoric and cheerleading, of course, is always in favor in this environment. We'll see what happens. If you want to get me, if you want to call me, if you want to write me, Andrew, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com is the best way to get in touch. And, of course, go over to the show notes. And, again, the show notes are on the top of thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just click podcast. Or on the left side, on the bottom, on the left column there, what you want to do is just click on the recent podcast. That will take you right to the show notes and all the information on how to get the course. If you want to take a virtual tour of the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, it's a 14-minute virtual tour, do that. And of course, if you want to learn more, check it out on Amazon. It's like $13. The Disciplined Investor Essential Strategies for Success is available for you at like $13 from Amazon. Go get that. One last thing, two last things. DH Unplugged is a podcast I do with John Dvorak. And of course, The Winning Investor is a really cool podcast I do once a week, about a 5-minute down and dirty, quick and dirty tips. Go check that out as well and subscribe to that right on iTunes. Until the next time we meet, I wish you a wonderful week. This is Andrew Horowitz again, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.